Hi, this is Marian Samuel from the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse in Antigua. Every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m., we interview a guest about real-life issues from the Caribbean. Welcome to Lighthouse Conversations, a time to explore the issues surrounding your everyday existence. Your family, your community, your environment, your health and safety habits, your lifestyle, both physically and spiritually, will all be discussed here on Lighthouse Conversations. Let's get started and see just what we can learn to better your life. Welcome to another episode of Lighthouse Conversation. I am Marian Samuel, your host for the program, and today I have with me Mrs. Kelsick, the deputy principal of the Princess Margaret Secondary School. She is also the general secretary of the teachers' union.
Yes.
Today we will be talking about the influential factors of the parent and the teacher in the life of a student's overall well-being and academic success. Welcome to the studio, Ms. Kelsick.
Thank you, Mrs. Samuel. It's good to be here.
Now, parents and teachers are some of the most influential people in the world. They both have that one thing in common, to teach. Mm-hmm. When you went into the educational system, what was one of your first goal to accomplish?
I'm going to be as honest as I possibly can.
Okay.
Teaching wasn't really my first choice of career. I really wanted to get into international relations, politics, law, that kind of thing. That's Ooh. Where I really wanted to go. But sometimes God have a way of redirecting us into what he has purposed for us to do. So I think now that not just teaching, but education on a whole is where I need to be. When I first came into teaching, my goal was just to survive 5 years.
Oh my. At least you said five.
My goal was to survive 5 years. And then I said, you know, I give myself 5 years and I'm going to find, you know, go into what I really wanted to get into. Mm-hmm. And then the 5 year mark came and I said, okay, 10 years. And then the 10 year mark came and I'm at 15 now. I'm at 15 now. So I don't think I'm going anywhere anytime soon unless the Lord really shifts things and redirects me mm-hmm. in a different mm-hmm. path. But, I think when you're in education, one of the things that you want to do is to impact lives positively. So at some point, it became about impacting the lives of the students who were placed before me. Because mm-hmm. I think for me, getting into law and into politics was so that I could change the world. But what greater way to change the world than one life at a time? Mm-hmm. And so teaching presents you that unique opportunity to touch the lives of so many students who come into your classroom and to somehow change the course of their lives for the better. So for me, I think that's what my goal is, to even now, just mm-hmm. to continue shaping the lives of the students who I come in contact with positively.
Right. That's good. Okay. I believe many times a parent might have the notion, however, that I am sending my child to school and that's about it.
That is the case sometimes, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
What would you say, or how can you correct that notion? Well, I'm just going to pack them up and send them off to school and the teacher can deal with them.
I have had the privilege of teaching both at a public school. I've also taught at a private school. And I can tell you the difference that I've seen is that you find you have a greater number of parents who are intricately involved in what happens in the lives of their students in the private school, I guess, because you have to pay a little more money than you would, right. A lot more than you would at a public school. Mm-hmm. Also, I think there are other factors that you have to take into account. You have students who go to private schools. Their parents tend to be more of the high middle income, more affluent, you know, so mm-hmm. they can afford to take the time, you know, to be involved. When you have parents who, for example, my mother, it's not that she wasn't involved in my life, but she had to go to work. So she wasn't always at every school event. She wasn't always able to pick up my report at the end of every term. But even though she was not physically present, I think something goes for letting your child know that you are still very much there. So there were expectations that she laid out for me, and I knew what the consequences were for not meeting those expectations and those standards. So even though she wasn't able to physically come to the school as often as, you know, we would love to see our parents, there were, when I was at home, I knew what was expected, and she communicated that very clearly. And I think that's something that our parents have to learn to do. We know that they're busy, because we have, at Princess Margaret School, we have a lot of our students coming from communities such as Villa and Grace Farm and, you know, the surrounding communities. The parents are working two jobs, three jobs sometimes, to try just to make ends meet. So we know you're busy, but I think if parents let their students or communicate clearly what the expectations are, and they do not relent on those expectations. So it's not just communicating, but not relenting on those expectations, then your students, your children will know that this is what is expected. And you know that you kind of tend to, when you interact with the parents, you tend to know those who have a strong hold. So even if I don't see you every week, every other week, every month, even if you're not at every PTA, I know you're a serious parent based on if your child comes before me and I have a conversation with your child and I have a conversation with you, I know that you are an involved parent.
That's true.
There are lots of stakeholders within the education sector, within our system, that contribute to our student success. But I think there is none, there's no relationship that is more critical to student success than the relationship between the school and the parent. Because that's where the students spend most time, between the teacher within the school and with the parent. And I think once there's an understanding of what the expectations are, once we can find some common ground between the school and between the parent, then it becomes easier for us to circumvent those other issues, for example, lack of resources that inevitably come up. So that relationship between the school and the teacher is important. It's critical. Between the school and the parents, sorry, it's critical. And any parent who might think to themselves, especially at the secondary school level, because you find at primary school, they tend to be a little bit more involved because they're younger. And we kind of tend to think, let's take a step back when they get to secondary school. But then that's when they need even more guidance, because they're going through that turbulent teenage years where they're trying to figure out themselves. So as a parent and even as a teacher, you have to find the right balance between letting them have that independence, but also understanding that I still have to keep my hand on you. Because if I don't, you might veer off into realms and into areas that I don't want you going into. So they're not too old, and it's important that parents still show that they are involved in their students, in their children's lives. They still communicate with the school. So even if you can't come in physically, the age of technology, there is email, there is WhatsApp, there's phone calls. Sometimes I have parents calling me all on Saturdays. All on a Saturday. So sometimes I want to get upset, but I'm like, no, this is what we want. This is what we want. We want open communication. And so sometimes if they reach out on a Saturday, I know it has to be something very serious. So I said, you know what, let me take the time and try to figure out how I can help them. But maintaining that relationship between the school and the home is very critical to our student success.
What would be your first advice to parents on their role towards their child's academics?
Know who your child is. So there are some students who, they don't need much. They are intrinsically motivated. For them, they have that inner drive to get the work done. For those students, you might just have to keep a little tap on them. So how is it going? Did you get your homework done? Just have to, you know, keep an eye to make sure. There are other students who are extrinsically motivated. And unless they're not rewards or consequences, you don't get the work done. So you have to know the type of child that you have. And once you recognize that this is my child, then you come up with ways to address the issues that may come up academically.
When should a parent be called into the school? Should it only be for disciplinary action?
So as a school, we are generally going to call you if there's a discipline issue. Outside of that, we may not call you, but there are things that the school, there are activities that the school would have that is an open invitation for parents to come. So, for example, at Princess Margaret School, we do our prize giving ceremony at the end of every year. When schools have those kind of things, it's always good to come out and support. The school may be having parent-teacher meetings. It's expected that you come out and support. If they're having an open day, a career fair, and it's open to the public as a parent, you come out to support to see what your child is doing. Even if it's a ministry-led initiative, but the school is taking part, all of those things are things that you can go to. For example, we have youth rally. If you're able to go, you know your child is marching or they're taking part in the drills, you show excitement, you go. They might not want... They might, front and say they don't want to come, but you still go and you show support to the school. You sit with the school or you show support. The school's panorama competition is coming up. Your child is playing in the pan group. You go, you support. And so whatever the school is having, and there's an open invitation to the public and to the parents, you go out and you support. On the side of the parent, you don't wait for the school to call you. You come. So I've had parents, for example, last week, Miss Kessick, I'm coming to you next week because I want to know who the teachers are. I want to know who I can speak to. And even if you may not have the teacher's number, you have the school's number. Mm-hmm. So you can always call the school and ask to speak to the teacher or leave your number. The teacher will call you back. Mm-hmm. Don't wait for the school to call you when there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And we don't only call when there's a problem, but sometimes because of the magnitude of what is happening in the school, most times the calls you get would be to come in to address an issue. But there are times when we try to be intentional about, even when we're calling them to tell them, your child has been selected for an award, we expect them to be at the ceremony. These are nice calls, but don't wait for us to call you. Mm-hmm. You just come and figure out what's happening. Even if it's once a term, you can come in, speak to the teachers, get an idea of what is happening, then you do that.
I know our students are unique with different personalities and have a pace at which they learn. But you being in the educational system for that many years, 15 years, what area would you encourage parents to be more alert to for greater achievements from their children?
I don't think there's any one particular area. I will go back to what I said earlier. Just know your child. Mm-hmm. And once you know who your child is, what they're capable of, then you work with the school to come up with a plan for achievement. So, for example, if you know your child has difficulties reading, some schools have, right now, I know that there are some schools that have literacy specialists. Some schools have special needs teachers. And so you know that your child has... a reading disability, an academic disability, be open, be honest about it. Because I don't like the word in education circles, you tend not to want to use disability. Mm-hmm. Students are differently abled because even if I am wheelchair bound or even if I'm blind or even if I have, I learn differently because academically, mentally there's something wrong. It doesn't mean that I can't learn.
Right.
It's just that my approach or the approach that the teacher uses has to be different with me. And so as parents, you need to know our children. Mm-hmm. And even if you think that they're slow, it is not an indictment on you or it's not an indictment on the child. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you didn't do your job as a parent or the child isn't a full, whole child who is capable. Mm-hmm. It just means that you have to come up with a plan of action for addressing the issues so that the child can find success. Mm-hmm.
How can parents assure their child or children that they are interested in their education to see them succeed without doing too much for them? Because, sometimes parents would do too much.
Sometimes we're too heavy-handed. It's a balance. It's a balancing act. And it's hard to find the balance sometimes. I have a five going on 6-year-old and I struggle sometimes when to give him the little space because even as a 5-year-old, he's going to be 6 next month. Even as a 5-year-old, there are times when he wants his independence. He's like, Mommy, I know. But then I want to make sure he gets it right. But then I'm like, no, I have to give him his space to grow. And when you're a child of a teacher, kind of pressure that sometimes your own parent puts on you is like, you have to get it right. Mm-hmm. So I have to learn to find that balance, but just be there for them. In whatever way you think that you need to be there for them, if it's just to ask them every day, do you have homework? Or to just keep them company while they're doing the homework. Sometimes you have to be heavy-handed and take away devices.
Right.
Sometimes you have to be honest with them and tell them, I don't think you are performing at your full potential. We need to take away some of these devices. Sometimes you just have to say, let me back up and see if I can get somebody else to reach you. But at the end of the day, once you are still present, just your presence alone makes a big difference. And so once they see that you're present and you're interested, you're asking questions about what their day was like, they might get tired of you doing it. Because even my little five-year-old, mommy, every day you want to ask me what my day is like. You know, I'm asking him about school. So you can imagine the teenagers. Yes. Mm-hmm. But you still ask, even if one day they will respond. They might say, okay, and shrug it off, but still ask. Eventually, they might one day just decide to spill and tell you exactly what it's like. So just be present and be able to pick up on cues. Because if you've raised them to that point, there are things that you will know about them that they don't even know about themselves. Their nuances and behaviors and habits that they have. So you'd be able to pick up on cues as to when something, when you really need to step in and say, okay, you know what? No, I'm putting my foot down right now. Be present and give them that room to grow, but still let them know that, listen, I'm still here and I will always be here.
What can parents do to influence learning in their children as old as university?
I think when children see that their parents are open to learning as well, it makes it easier. So you have to practice what you preach. And I'm not just talking about formal learning, but I believe in lifelong learning. Do a course, maybe do a course with them. Learn something new. Learn to make them teach you something. Let them teach you how to use a new app. I think when children realize that parents are open to these things, it may be easier for us to get across to them the importance of learning. Because education is not limited. Education and learning isn't limited to what happens in a classroom. It's not limited to what happens at CXC. And we have confined education to that for a very long time. Learning goes beyond the classroom. Learning and education goes beyond CXC. It goes beyond all the higher exams we do, national assessments, all of that. We need to get our children to a point where they learn because they love learning. And what I have found most is that when we model the behavior we want to see in our children, it becomes easier for us to say to them, well, this is what you should do because they see you doing it. Learn something new. Even if it's just a new recipe and you're doing it with them and you're cooking with them in the kitchen, they see that you're learning something new. Let them teach you because they're very much into the technology. Let them teach you about technology, about their version of technology. Let them teach you something because if you are open to them teaching you, they may be a lot more open to you teaching them.
That's true. We are in some serious times, especially when it comes to our children schooling. It's like our children, they are at a loss when it comes to knowing their responsibility to and in society. You in the education system, you interact with that vulnerable age from 11 years to 19 years. What is the contributing factor for that rebellion, that behavioral pattern that we are seeing our children are up against?
I'm going to take it from, there are lots of things. What they see on TV, they're at that very vulnerable age where, you know, you want to feel accepted by your group. You want to feel popular. You want to be popular. You want to be one of the cool kids. And so you do things that you think will get you those kind of cool points. But I think from a spiritual standpoint, because I don't just see from the lens as an educator, I see from my Christian lens as well. And the foundation of our society has been broken because the home is broken. And once you have that breaking happening at that foundational level, then everything is a ripple effect from that. So you have fathers are not in the homes. And I'm telling you, there's nobody who can convince me that, especially when it comes to our boys, that a mother alone can raise a boy child. Our children, both our boys and our girls, they need their fathers in their lives. And when you don't have, and I'm not just talking about being able to, you know, being married and living, because the ideal, God's design is for marriage and for both parents to be in the home. that is the ideal.
Yes.
And outside of that, there's going to be chaos, which is why we're having chaos now. But from an education standpoint, even outside of that, when you have a situation where the father just isn't in the child's life at all, or the mother isn't in the line, one parent is missing altogether, then it creates issues. It creates a strain for the parent that is present. And it's like, how do I fill in the gap for the parent that is missing? And in we have to be honest and we have to be real. In most cases, it is the father who's missing. There's a lot of emasculation that is happening with our men now. But there's purpose that God has birthed in our men. They're supposed to be the head. They're supposed to be leading their households. They're supposed to be, you know, leading the charge with the children. And when that is not there, once that design has been messed with, it's been tampered, there's going to be chaos.
Right.
And so the chaos we're seeing now is stemming from that. And so our education system is going to continue to try to fix the problem. They're going to try to fix a spiritual problem from a world's view, and it's not going to be fixed. That is, for me, that's how I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you don't take a spiritual approach to this problem, it's not going to be fixed. Because we have boys who don't have fathers as examples, who are going to join gangs because they want to feel accepted. We have just chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, it's not even that the parents aren't trying. Sometimes the mothers are trying. I had a mother come into my office today, and she is at her wit's end because she's trying with her male child, and he's just not walking in line and doing what he's supposed to be doing. But when you have that gap, when you leave that door open, it leaves it open for a lot of other influences to come in. And unless you don't have a situation where some of us are lucky, because I was raised by a single parent, it was just my mommy, but some of us are lucky that we have that family unit. So the family unit would cover the, you know, the absence of the father, because you'd have uncles who'd be able to positively influence you. You'd have other aunties and, you know, that could help your mom with your... But right now, a lot of us, we don't have that sense of community anymore.
Right.
So in addition to there being that spiritual decay, you just don't have the sense of community that you used to have anymore. So you can't talk to anybody's child because we're talking to my child for and we're saying to my child, and sometimes parents come in and want to fight you. It is horrible.
It is true.
It is horrible. Mm-hmm. And we have to, for it to change, it is going to take a realization that this is not just a physical issue. There are spiritual elements to it that we need to address. And I think there needs to be, from a social standpoint and their responsibilities, I think there needs to be more severe consequences to what is happening. Because I was looking for it just now, and I think there's a Juvenile Delinquency Act or something. I'm not sure if it, I don't want to misquote what the act says. I've heard it out of the mouth of students. They don't do nothing at school now. Because if it's done at school, it has to be addressed at school. These things will go to the Ministry of Education. They will be expelled. So a lot of their bad behavior happen outside of school. So the school doesn't have to deal with it. And when you have the system dealing with it, then there are no real harsh consequences. It's not like they go in jail. It's not like they are... The youth intervention program is there. But I find in our system, we put a lot of programs in place, but don't adequately give, you know, provide the resources that they need to function effectively. So we have all these fancy programs that we want to do in place, and we put people over it, and we're just stressing them out because we're not giving them exactly what they need, the resources that they need to function.
Yes.
And so I think it's going to take the church, the community, and our system, the you know, the legal and education system, coming together and realizing, listen, no one person can solve this issue. We all need to work together to try and figure out how to address the issues that we're having with our, especially our young men. I'm seeing it in our girls. Our girls are getting more aggressive too. So you find the girls would want to fight the boys. It is crazy. It is crazy. But the good, I think what gives us hope is that there are more students who are doing the right thing than those who are not. So it's just that because of social media, because there's always been fighting and stuff in school, you know. When I was going to school, I went to school in the times of the Crips and the Bloods and them kind of people and gang thing and so. And you just didn't have social media to broadcast it.
Right.
So you have social media now, so you've seen a lot more of what is happening in the school. But I think what gives us hope is you have more students, mm-hmm. greater number, greater percentage of students who are doing the right thing mm-hmm. than those who are not.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not hearing about the students who are leaving straight from secondary school and going off to university because they've gotten scholarships, athletic scholarships and academic scholarships and those kind of things. We're not hearing about that because, you know, mm-hmm. that don't sell as much as the juicy things, the story and the fighting and so would sell. But we have a lot more positive than negative. It's just that that small percentage of persons doing the negative, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. And you nip the problem, you know, it's sin. And I know society doesn't want to hear that. It's the spiritual aspect mm-hmm. of it. It is a spiritual issue that we have to rectify it first. And it's back to the Bible.
That is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, even if I had some doubts or some inkling of doubt in my mind that God is real, and that, you know, the Christ, whatever is said in the Bible, there's no truth to it. Even if there was an inkling of doubt, that is no longer there, because the more we take God out of our schools, the more we take God out of our families, the worse our society just continues to decay.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have 11, just this morning, one of my cleaners was telling me, an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old almost killed her 20-year-old cousin over the man's phone. His phone.
Wow.
So when you have, you know, these little children, it has to be more than just they're just doing it.
Right.
There's something spiritual mm-hmm. that is driving that behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you go, what is happening now too is you find a lot more of our students, as young as they are avid smokers. So I don't know, a lot of us, when we heard the marijuana was decriminalized,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if we took that to be that it is
it's okay
legal,
for us to,
mm-hmm. but I don't know. That just opened the floodgates
mm-hmm.
and everybody
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
want to be a smoker now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to smoke marijuana. And I'm like, as an adult, mm-hmm. and that's what you want to do, that's your decision to make. God give us free will, that's your decision. But I feel like when you start messing with our children like at such a young age, before their brain is fully developed, before they really know themselves, it's going to create rippling effects. And that is exactly what we are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Our children don't know how to deal with conflict appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to think properly. And as soon as there's an issue, it's aggression.
Mm-hmm.
There's a spirit mm-hmm. that is driving. How
right.
are you just so
mm-hmm.
angry?
Yeah.
There's a spirit that drives all of that. And if we're not honest with ourselves, we're just going to keep going in circles
yes.
and these things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's especially the decriminalizing of the marijuana. I think saying it and not putting things in place to combat the consequences, it's irresponsible.
Students come into school, and as soon as they come to school, they smell like marijuana. Like,
exactly.
It just get me high. I feel like I'm the one that smelled marijuana. We are, I don't know, we are disadvantaging our children. There's a greater number of them that are doing positive things.
And I like that.
But that small percentage, they're doing so much.
Mm-hmm.
The little small percentage, they're doing so much. And I think that we're still failing them, because we can't just leave them. They're going to become the criminals of tomorrow, who are going to just make my life hell. Mm. So when I make my little money from teaching, then you're going to want to come and take my little pittance that I just make from teaching. We're failing our children, and eventually we're going to see that we've failed our societies if
mm-hmm.
we don't nip this thing in the bud right now
mm-hmm.
and address the issues on the ground.
This generation right now, they're who we are going to depend on later on in
mm-hmm.
the next 20, 30 years from now. So what are they going to do? Mentally, they are broken. So who is going to run society? Join us next week as we continue the conversation with Mrs. Kelsick, Deputy Principal of the Princess Margaret Secondary School, and the General Secretary of the Teachers Union, as we discuss the influential factors of our students' overall well-being and academic success. Thanks for listening in on our conversation. We trust that it was beneficial to you as you continue to develop a more meaningful life. Do you have a topic or a guest
you would like us to have a conversation with for a future episode on Lighthouse Conversations, we would love to hear your suggestions. Send us a mail at Caribbean Radio Lighthouse, P.O. Box 1057, St. John's, Antigua, or Lighthouse, B-I-M-I, at gmail.com, or give us a call at area code 268-462-1454, or send us a message via WhatsApp or text at area code 268-782-1454. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can hear Lighthouse Conversations Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. on the Caribbean Radio Lighthouse. If you're in Antigua, you can listen at 92.3 MHz FM. If you're in the Caribbean, you can listen at 1160 kHz AM or listen online at www.radiolighthouse.org from anywhere in the world. Or you can subscribe to this podcast. Looking forward to having you join us next time. Bye-bye.